From JMI Wealth Thursday morning, Andrew Kelleher, good morning.
Yeah, very good morning, Mike.
So we're on our residential property theme this week today. Welcoming QV. What are they telling us? What do we know?
Yeah, so we had the Barth and Thompson sales data for Auckland yesterday, and now QV's given us the February data, and that's national. So, and then next week we'll get the REINZ data. And after all that, I think we should be in a reasonable place to understand what's happening in the property markets. QV data definitely echoes of yesterday's conversation, Mike. Those, I suppose, more affordable regions continue their solid growth, and we've got Auckland dragging the chain. Now, we talked about this yesterday too as well, but some of the strongest growth rate in the country in residential property, where is it, Mike? QV's confirmed it.
The Hawke's Bay.
Hawke's Bay. Actually, you got strong growth rates right across Lower North Island. Didn't I say Hastings was trendy yesterday? 9.9% growth in residential property in 3 months there. Got to love that. But it's right across Manawatu, Masterton, Palmerston North, Carterton, all seeing strong annual growth rates. So the QV house price index up 3% in the last 12 months, 0.7% in the last quarter, so the last 3 months. But the value of average house prices in Auckland is down 0.9%. And the sunny North Shore, coastal North Shore, down 3.1%. So just a quick note on methodology here. QV uses settled transaction data. So these transactions may have gone unconditional some time ago if there's a lag between it going unconditional when it's settling. REINZ actually uses unconditional transaction data, so a bit more of a timely element to it. But Mike, at the moment at a high level, good growth in the regions, possibly slowing, Auckland house prices stalling and starting to go backwards.
Very glad you raised this. I read this with some alarm yesterday. This bloke Harrison, I've never heard of him, but nevertheless, I'm not convinced the banks need the sort of work that Orr thinks they do, and this guy Harrison has put a price tag on all this.
Yeah, he has. So we're talking about bank capital, and the issue I have here, Mike, is I just don't think this issue is getting the attention that it should be getting. So yesterday we had the release of a document by an economist called Ian Harrison. He's an ex-central banker. This is a 51-page document too, so it's not just kind of a flippant kind of flick at these proposals. But I think there should be more of a debate here. Now, I'll use the Tax Working Group's proposal for capital gains tax as a comparison. $8 billion cost to taxpayers over 5 years, which I might add is being redistributed. So that's a redistribution. Harrison is arguing that the introduction of bank capital adequacy proposals could cost $1.5 billion a year. So what's that over 5 years, Mike? $7.5 billion, almost on par with the CGT proposals. But it's not being redistributed. This is just a cost. So this is as big as CGT potentially, if you believe the other side of the story. Now, the real issue here is the extent to which this is actually making the banking system safer. So what this actually is quite technical. It's about how do you define how often are we going to get a banking crisis? And so how much capital do the banks need to actually hold in the event of those banking crises? So there's quite a bit of disagreement here. So, and the issue, of course, is the banks potentially raising mortgage rates or increasing their margin. That's the gap between the deposits and the loans to cover the fact that they need more capital in the business. Now, the RBA has said it would reduce the OCR potentially if that happened. But that, Mike, that still potentially hits the deposit customers. Yeah. And there are hundreds of millions of deposits here. And look, that's only one element of the potential consequences. Will it have an impact on lending to different sectors? How does it impact on lending to the corporate sector? What about lending to the agricultural sector? What about marginal borrowers? So what is the attitude of the current banks to putting in more capital? The thing is, Mike, we're not getting the debate this decision. Remember, you get to vote on the political parties and CGT. You don't get to vote on this.
Very good point. Needs more debate. What I found interesting, you said the decision was made on a whim. It was about banks falling over every 200 years versus 100 years. And the change wouldn't actually lead to anything. And that's before you get to my very amateurish view of all of this. And that is that my understanding of the banking system in this part of the world is very, very robust and strong. And we saw it in 2008.
That's exactly right. So the question is, how safe does the bank system need to be, and how much are we prepared to pay for that?
All right. What are the numbers?
25,669, down 135 points on the Dow Jones. That's about 0.5%. 2,777 on the S&P 500, also down sort of roughly 0.5%. The NASDAQ, 7,524, down 52. So a little bit weak there. FTSE 100, 7,196. Nikkei, 21,596. The Shanghai Composite, 3,102. The ASX 200 gained 46 yesterday, closing at 6,245. We gained 15 points in the NZ 50, 9,415. On the currencies, 0.6773 against the US, 0.9643 Aussie, 0.5984 euro, 0.5147 pounds, 75.62 yen, gold $1,286.70, Brent crude $65.51.
You have a good one, mate. Appreciate it as always. Andrew Kelleher at JMI Wealth. He and that expertise is available to you at jmiwealth.co.nz.